is WGXC 90.7 from the Hudson Studio in New York. I'm Nancy Marin, your host for the Social Graces Program. The Social Graces Program covers all things pertaining to etiquette, manners, and protocol. Hi, I'm Nan Marin with Social Graces. Today with Dick Sable. Thanks for being here. And Ross Bennett, who's a comedian that was on David Letterman last night. I hope you, some of you might have seen him. He's actually here in the studio today in Hudson. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Good to have you, Ross.
Thanks, Dick.
Haven't seen you in a while.
Yes, it's been almost 24 hours. Dick and I are very good friends, and we had lunch together yesterday.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. So I wanted you to talk about yourself a little bit and how you became a comedian.
Well, you know, I grew up in a small town. My hometown is in Hornell, New York, Steuben County, sort of the southwest Finger Lake region. And of course, show business is not something that's really spoken of over there. It's something that you may partake watching once in a while, but the thought of being in it is not... Not really, it's not part of our vocabulary. And I ended up being in the Army in the 70s. I enlisted in the Army out of high school. I ended up going to West Point, the military academy at West Point.
Wow.
And I wasn't the...
It's a good foundation for comedy.
Yeah, I think so. And what happens is, well, it's certainly a good foundation for performance.
Mm.
Because we had a costume.
Oh, right.
You know,
right, yeah.
And we had lots of lines we had to learn.
Lots of directors.
Yeah, and lots of directors. Yeah, imagine a play with a lot of directors.
Yeah.
So what happens is I go to West Point in 75. And what happens in 1975? Well, in the fall, Saturday Night Live comes on. And then from Saturday Night Live, Steve Martin becomes the biggest star in the country for that period of time. And what ends up happening is I'm smitten by it. You know, my first year... My first year, I didn't know what was going on because I was in my plebe year and you couldn't watch TV your plebe year.
Oh.
But during my Christmas break, I saw HBO, a fledgling HBO, and I saw a couple of comedy specials with Robert Klein and Steve Martin. And then by the next summer of 76, I now have access to watching TV. And... my gosh, here's these people. They're only a little bit older than I am, maybe 5-6 years older than I am, and they just look like they're having so much fun.
Were you naturally funny, though? I mean, when you were with people, did you make people laugh? Did you think of funny things?
I think so, but you know, when looking back on it, the question is always asked, were you the class clown?
Right.
And I really just think I was the class needy, obnoxious guy. You know, I there were things I did that were funny, but it wasn't really motivated, I think, by a tremendous sense of irony and satire. It was just, you know, look at me. I've got to be somebody.
Yeah,
please help me.
Yeah.
And so I broke off from the academy in 77 and I went to a theater school for a year down in South Florida. And then by March of 78, I started doing this full time. I just made the leap. And it was a true leap of faith because there was no industry. There was no stand-up comedy industry.
Right.
There was no work,
right?
You know?
Do you write all of your own script?
The term probably most used is probably material.
Material.
And you might be more likely to say act. It's our act. And some guy, you know, I always loved George Carlin.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of those guys who really influenced me when I was a kid. And he always made a point that He was not a comedian who wrote his own material.
Oh?
He wasn't a comedian who wrote his own jokes. He was a performer who created his own material.
Sort of a social commentary.
No. I'm getting it wrong. He was not a comedian who wrote his own jokes. He was a writer who performed his own material.
I see.
So for George Carlin, as I understood it, the writing was at the very core of everything he did, and then he performed it. I have always been more of a comic who created my own material.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I write it, but the creation process involves much more. The writing is just that's just the germ. It's really once I get it on stage and I interact it with an audience that it really starts to take on life.
Yeah. I've seen your work a couple of times, including last night on Letterman, and you're wonderful.
Oh, thanks.
How did you get through the material? I mean, the audience was applauding all the time. You had to wait for the audience to stop applauding before you could continue.
I think there's some comics whose delivery, their performance, facilitates applause. You know, you see some people, you know, like Bill Maher. It's like you can almost see him sort of sitting back, like, you know, and of course this is the place you would applaud. And for me, the applause, when I get applause, it always feels like it's somehow interrupting me. And you can even watch, if you watch the show I did, and if you missed it, you could catch it on my website, rossbennett.com. There's a point where the applause comes in, and I actually look over towards Dave, and I apologize. I'm sorry. You know, it was like, because it's just like, I stepped on the laugh and everything, you know.
Yeah.
Right. But
your material is usually very, very, very clean, very, it's not... licentious in any way. I mean, lots of comedians go blue. I mean, they.
Well, here's what
I like your material because it's very clean. And
I do too.
Here's what I tell young comics, and I never wanted to be one of those. I never thought I'd be the old comic who was talking to the young comics. Okay, but if you work blue, and believe me, I know how to work blue. I've been in.
What's work blue?
Blue is swear words.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to just say to you, if you just give me 1 second, when I watched you last night, I really like your style of humor.
Oh, thank you.
Like, it's really funny, but you're not insulting anyone.
No, no.
And it's not dirty or anything.
It's sort of commentary on the human condition.
Yeah. And people like that.
Yeah.
So the thing is that I tell young comics that if you work blue. Unless you're a star, unless you're George Carlin or Lisa Lampanelli or Sam Kinison or, you know, the litany of you know, Louis Black, people who, you know, who use a lot of blue language.
Yes.
Unless you're one of those stars where the audience is coming out expecting you, then the most you're going to be able to make is a couple hundred dollars a night.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever gotten a request that Ross, we have a raunchy audience. Can you loosen it up a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I've been working for 35 years. I mean, I've done and said everything.
I see.
Okay, and but the point I was making was that when you're a comedian like I am, every audience I'm seeing, there may be some people there who've seen me before, but for the most part, it's a generic audience. And the level of expectation... If I go blue, then there's going to be people who are offended.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm not blue and I'm funny, then even the people who like blue material, they're okay with it.
Yeah, I see.
Okay? I mean, I can't go wrong if I'm clean and funny.
Right.
Okay,
exactly.
Whereas if I'm blue and funny, there's going to be somebody who's going to be offended.
Right.
And the show doesn't go by where somebody, I don't get people afterwards saying, you know, I'll get both things. I'll get, you know, I really could tell that you were holding back, that you really wanted to go a lot dirtier, you know, and we were really looking for that. But I also get people who say, you know, I can't thank you enough.
Yes, that's right. How I felt that you, last night.
And because, you know, the truth is, in a comedy club, and I'm working right now up at the Comedy Works up in Albany.
Uh-huh. What's the name of the place?
Comedy Works.
Comedy Works, okay.
And it's a great club and been around for a long time. But the if an act is overly blue, and an audience member comes in who doesn't like that kind of material, you've lost that audience member.
Yeah, I bet you. Yeah,
forever. Because they will not. Nobody wants to come back in and get punched in the nose again.
Mm, right.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, this is just a side note. I won some tickets at Tarrytown. What's that? Venue there where they have concerts and stand up in Tarrytown, New York. I can't remember the name.
No.
Anyway, they were Ralphie May tickets.
Right.
And I wasn't going to go.
Right.
So I gave them to my daughter and her girlfriend went. She said, "Oh my gosh, Mom! You would have walked out the first word out of his mouth. It was that bad. It was really bad."
But Ralphie May is a draw. People come and see Ralphie May and they know what he's going to do coming in. So for them, it's a tremendous experience.
Yeah. Yes.
You know?
So you don't ever really do much adult material. You want it.
I have said and done everything some point in my career.
How do you deal with a heckler? Do you run into
those?
Do you
have a heckler?
I mean, are you polite to them or?
And once again,
please
don't, I have a
please don't say that.
I have a spectrum of experience for 35 years. There was a time when I was ruthlessly abusive.
Oh, really?
Ruthlessly abusive to the point of, you know, people would be almost in tears. You know, and you know, they were in tears of laughter, the ones who were enjoying me abusing the person. And then the person who was getting it is just shrinking more and more. And just, you know, really horrible sarcasm, you know, but what I have found at this point in my career that people are listening to me. Uh-huh. So I can often deal with it more with a look these days.
Oh, really? Yeah.
You know, last night, I'm doing something. I don't know what the thing was. And somebody said something, oh, I know what it is. I know what it is. This is a perfect example. I said something and then he answered something back is that really, you know? Uh-huh. And I said, why would I lie to you?
Was this someone in the audience?
This is somebody in the audience. I mean, I said a joke and then he sort of was incredulous. Really?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I said, why would I lie to you? We're not married. Okay? a line that I've been using for, you know, for 20 some years. Okay?
Right.
And then he said, because now they're often trying to top me. Uh-huh. They're trying to top me.
He goes, that's not
what you said last night.
Okay? Right. They want it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, and then it sort of sat there. It just sort of sat there. Mm-hmm. And that was one of those moments where I didn't say anything.
Uh-huh.
I just let it sit there. And it sort of just sort of fester, as we all sort of experienced this little dud that he had laid out. And then I followed it up with, and I've been using this for years. Do you see the difference between your jokes and my jokes? I'm not saying I'm a great comedian, but at least my jokes offer the semblance of entertainment and relief from the pain of life that's out there. Your joke, quite frankly, made all of us feel worse. It sucked the air out of the room like a fire, you know? And so that kind of sarcasm, but it's gentle and witty.
Yeah. And you're not cussing or swearing or belittling.
But the only reason I'm not is because I've done it so many times and the price to be paid. I'll tell you what the price to be paid is. I always look at it when you're real harsh with a heckler, you have to imagine it's like you're sitting there with a sledgehammer behind your back, and they know you have a sledgehammer behind your back. You pull it out and you crush this person with a sledgehammer. For the rest of the show, people pull back and are reluctant to give a part of themselves up because they're afraid
that you're
going to pull the sledgehammer out and get smacked again.
Yeah. The wrath.
Right.
Yeah.
So
you have to handle them a certain way.
So I'm finding these days the lighter I can be, the more the idea that we're all in this together, we're just here to have fun, and I don't want to hurt anybody.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Now, I know that you've opened for Melissa Manchester in Florida, but I was lucky to catch you when you opened for Lucy Arnaz.
Right.
Are you given any kind of instructions as to how to warm up the audience, or what do they tell you before
you go on? I'll tell you, this is funny about that. You know, and of course, my attitude is always, I'm not from the era of the great opening act comedians. I got friends like Dick Capri and Freddie Roman and Stewie Stone. These people opened for all the big acts during the 60s and 70s, Tom Jones, Engelbert Humperdinck, Stephen Eady, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they were true opening acts, and that was their goal, and they made good money, and they did wonderful work, okay? And that wasn't, I'm a comedy club comedian.
Yeah.
So at different times, I've had opportunities come, will you open? Sort of like a throwback. So I go open from Lissa Manchester, did my show, and killed, had a great time. She loved it. I opened for Lucy Arnaz, wonderful lady, you know, Lucille Ball's daughter, and tremendously talented.
Yes, she's very talented.
She's a triple threat. Yes, you know, she's a singer, a dancer, and an actress.
Incredible singer.
And you throw all of that together in a nightclub act, and it's like through the roof.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
So, but I do my show, and I do the joke I close with, which is a routine on a colonoscopy. I do a routine on a colonoscopy.
And nice clean stuff. Huh? Nice clean material.
Comparatively. I mean, frankly, I set it up that I'm doing it as a public service, because if I can, because one of the big problems people have in their one of the big health problems is people put it off when they turn 50 because they're embarrassed by the procedure, and some of those people who put it off end up it can be a tragic situation that if they had discovered it earlier, you know, things would have been different. So I figure if I can get them laughing about it when they're in their 30s and 40s,
right,
then when they're 50 and the doctor tells them it's time, they won't put it off. And I tell them on stage, I said, maybe in the course of my career, I'll save a few lives.
Yeah.
And then I follow it up.
I didn't think of it that way when I heard the jokes.
And then I follow it up and say that's all a bunch of BS. The truth is I'm just doing it for the laughs because, you know, how can you not get laughs by talking about a camera in your butt? Okay, that's the But... Right. So I do the colonoscopy bit, closing my act when I'm opening for Lucy Arnaz, and afterwards the promoter comes back and says, everything's great, you gotta lose the colonoscopy bit.
Oh really? Yeah.
Okay. So I lost it. No problem. The point is, when I'm opening for somebody, if I'm working to somebody else's audience,
yes,
I feel my responsibility is to serve the needs of the act that has hired me to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay? And that's what I did. It was no problem.
Yeah. Do you deal through agents like actors do? Or how do you get work? I mean, how do you socially connect with the business?
Well, we all have that view of agents, like from the old movies on vaudeville and everything, you know, and the 10%ers, the people, you know, they're out there representing you and everything. Uh-huh. And that's not, and of course in Hollywood, there's still specific agents who represent you and they are acting as your intermediary. Most of the agents I deal with, what you would call an agent, are actually producers. They're actually middlemen who've been hired by venues to produce a show. Mm-hmm. For X amount of dollars, okay, and then they fill the show out.
Oh, I see.
And then whatever between what they have to pay the acts and what the people gave them, that's their profit.
So you're like a name on a list, or other comics are all on kind of a list,
right? And there's some comics whose level of talent and expertise is pretty interchangeable, and then you get to a point where it's like, if you want what I do, I'm the only person you can come to for it. Mm-hmm. For instance, right now, I'm one of the lines in my act is I say I'm not from New York City, I'm from New York Country, the rural western part of New York State, the part that most of your audience is from right now, the part of New York that, you know, that the world doesn't even know we exist. Because when they think of New York, all they think of is New York City.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So I talk a lot about the rural, you know, upstate Western New York part of New York. Now, and I call it New York Country. They have New York City. I call it New York Country. I'm the best comedian that is working who can perform in New York State, outside of New York City.
Uh-huh.
I believe I'm the very best at what. So if they want what I have to offer, I'm the only. Now, there are other people who can entertain these folks.
Mm.
But no one has the act and the expertise and the experience that I do, you know. So when I talk about the guys out here, that there's two kinds of guys in New York State, guys who go hunting and guys who go hunting, you know.
Yeah.
And I talk about the difference between the hunting and the hunting. They know that I know the experience,
right? Because you're
okay. So
from the same area,
and so you were asking. But, you know, I have a reputation out here, and that means that if they want to come, they can either come to me, or, and I'm holding my hand up, they can go on this level, or they can go to this down here. Now, there's other places in the country, the list is pretty much straight across.
Yeah. Okay. I think you have a very tough, I mean, all of the vocations in the arts are very difficult to survive in the arts. And of course, you more than survive, you're like a star, you know. But how do you get a job? I mean, how do you?
Well,
you wait until somebody calls you.
You have to understand. That's exactly it. You know, that's exactly it. Is for the most part.
What was your first job? How did you get your? What did you do for your first job? I mean,
well, I did talent shows early on to try and get some stage experience.
Working for nothing, like actors.
Working for nothing, doing talent shows.
Okay.
Looking for any opportunity to get up in front of people with a microphone.
Uh-huh.
And then showcase rooms where they didn't pay anything. Once again, anything I knew to get up in front of people. And then all of a sudden, I would get a phone call, or I'd meet a comic, or I'd meet somebody after a show, and they go, hey, can you come and do blah, blah, blah?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got this little thing we're doing. And, you know, early on, I was an opening act. I was an MC. Got $25 for this, $50. No, wow, they're paying me. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you would hear about people, and there was, and sometimes I was cold calling people.
Uh-huh.
You know, I hear you got a club. What about me? And selling myself on the phone. And then slowly but surely, you have a reputation, for better or worse, that develops.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you do enough shows where you do well, and they know you do well, and their audiences like what you do, then, you know, they're more inclined to go, hey, how about Ross for this? So now, 35 years later, I have a reputation, if not amongst the public, at least amongst my industry.
Have you ever done a roast? Because you're such a nice person. I can't imagine you doing a roast. And what is the purpose of a roast anyway? What, it seems to like hurt people's feelings, or doesn't it? I don't get it.
Well, first off, you're saying I'm a nice person. I do my best to give the illusion of being a nice person, but I'm a human being, and I've said many catty things. I've said many catty things throughout the years. So about a roast. They've been going on for a long time, basically insulting people with their permission.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With their permission.
With their permission.
I guess that's the difference.
In front of
maybe.
Other people. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Right.
And the roasts that we're most familiar with are the Friars Club roasts.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the day, everybody who would insult you would be some level of a friend.
Uh-huh.
So these are people all saying things from a loving place. Okay?
Right.
And the key is the wit. You know, the jokes and how smart the jokes are.
Yeah.
You know, how clever the jokes are. What roasts have become is that they'll have a celebrity, you know, because of Comedy Central, and they're like, they'll have a celebrity.
Yeah.
And they'll have a dais of people who are insulting them. But the truth is, there's no relationship there. Mm-hmm. So what happens is people are saying things about someone they're not even a friend of. And for the most part, it goes by fine because, you know, they're all in show business. They know they understand the way it works. But there are some people I saw a Chevy Chase roast 10 years ago.
Oh, uh-huh.
And people were ruthless, ruthless. Mm. And afterwards he got up and he just goes, I don't even know you people. You know nothing about me.
Wow.
And but in the course of it, he said two or three minutes of funny stuff. And when Comedy Central edited it and put it together, they just took the funny stuff and you didn't see the fact that he was saying, you know, that you people are just horrible,
you know.
When I do it, I've been too mean at times.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Too mean at times, you know.
It's a fine line. It really is.
Someone told me this once, you know, for instance, you've got a comedian. I won't mention his name. And he's losing his hair. He's an older man. He's losing his hair, and he's got a bunch of hair plugs that don't look good. Okay? If you're roasting him,
you don't mention the plugs.
You don't mention that because you know it's going to hurt him.
Too personal, right?
But he's short. He's also short. You make fun of him being short. You make fun of the things that he's comfortable having made fun of.
Okay.
And you're not seeking to hurt the man. That's what being mean is really all about.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I've written mean jokes before, and I wrote one. I always like this one. Comedian. This guy had big, giant, capped teeth. I mean, these enormous teeth that do not go in this man's face. And the line I came up with was, you know, so and so teaches us all this basic truth, which is that when you're getting new teeth, don't order them on the internet. Okay.
Right.
But you see, you're laughing at it. It's because the joke itself, in and of itself, is witty.
Right.
Yes.
And,
right.
And the truth, the wit supports the truth.
Mm. And that's, you do have some social graces then, don't you? You're not, you're not brutal. You're still funny and entertaining without just chopping them down at their knees.
I'm fortunate in that I was raised in a time and an era. I went to church, and we grew up, you know, with a sense of caring for other people, you know, it's a sense of other people's feelings. And so even when I have been inappropriate, ruthless, mean at different times earlier in my career, in the back of my mind, I always knew this isn't right.
You didn't feel good.
I didn't write. And at this point in my career, I'm much, you know, I'm just comfortable doing what's right to begin with.
I wonder if I could just impose on you. Would you just quickly, because we only have a few minutes. First, I want you to talk about where you're playing tonight, the address, if you have the phone number, any information in case people want to come up and have a really good time.
Well, I'm going to be someplace down in New York City.
Okay, so they give out your
website. The best way to get in touch with me is my website, rossbennett.com.
That's easy.
rossbennett.com, and it's fun. If you like my stuff, of course I have a CD. It's on iTunes. They can go to iTunes for $10. They can get my CD.
Have you ever thought of doing a one man show? I mean, your material is so good, and your life is so interesting.
I've thought about it. I've started writing it a number of times. Mm-hmm. At this point in my life and in my career, I feel that what I really do best is I entertain people for 45 minutes when they're sitting there with a cocktail.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Jokes are what I really do best. In terms of having people come into a theater and me presenting a show that has a theme
it's gotta
and an
have a
arc
theme.
That goes through the whole
that's
thing.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
I don't feel comfortable with that.
Oh, you don't?
I don't.
You haven't found the theme yet, maybe. Huh? Maybe
well,
you haven't
I just,
found the theme.
I like going right. from joke to joke, uh-huh. and a topic doesn't last for more than 2 or 3 minutes. Uh-huh. And that's what I'm most comfortable with. The idea of trying to actually say something, you know, that they're going to walk out, I was really moved. I was really moved by his whole thing about, you know, like I lost 70 pounds. And so I was thinking of a one-man show called Consumed. And it would have been dealing with everything from the consumption of food to being consumers in the public.
Right.
Okay. And what they're trying to sell us, what people try and sell us as consumers. But you know something, it's just too heavy for me. I just prefer telling the jokes.
What do you aspire? Where do you see your life going?
Well, you know, my greatest aspiration is to be able to enter into retirement and not have to eat cat food. Uh-huh. But I just want to continue to work. You know, I love doing what I do. And I love growing as an entertainer. You know, that's one thing I think it's made me different than some guys is that I'm always looking to, you know, to learn something new. And but what do I aspire to? I just want to keep doing what I do.
I sort of see you out in Vegas, you know, as a headliner in Vegas.
I don't know.
Really,
I mean, maybe in the 60s,
uh-huh.
I was a Vegas-style headliner. But right now, the kind of entertainment they need, I just don't know if I
can
provide. Well,
the big production numbers and nudie girls were.
That's right. That's what I want.
With lots of feathers.
I need
bows.
Chorus girls. Nan, could you be a chorus girl behind me? I can see Nan with feathers.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Lord. I love the joke about your parking spot. You were suspicious, Nan. That just kills me, that joke. That you found a parking spot. And then you were real suspicious, like, why did you find this parking spot?
Well, the joke is, when I find a parking spot in New York City, I feel like I felt in my 20s when I would have casual sex. Because I'm thankful. Yeah. I'm thankful. I'm appreciative. And I'm mildly suspicious. But what I didn't say on the show, because I edited it after that joke. Funny. What I didn't say is that I always pull into a parking spot in Manhattan and I get out, but I can't leave it.
You can't leave, right?
I'm always standing
there. Something wrong with the spot.
Something's
got to be wrong.
I'm standing there in doubt. I don't think I can leave this. It doesn't seem right.
That was it, too.
What does that sign say? Monday through Thursday?
And then then you go up the block, right. And they have that pole, and they have like three or four signs, and each sign seems to slightly contradict the instructions of the other sign.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Ross Bennett, thank you so much for
coming. Thank you, Nan. Thank you for inviting me.
And
thank you,
I'm Ross. So happy that you came and gave us all some laughs, right? And thank you, too, Dick Sable, for being with us.
Very happy to be here, Nan Maron.
Wonderful show. Thank you.